action-filled adventure.
My God, it's ELO. Very cool. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday. It is the 21st of August, and I hope you're having a beautiful day. It is a beautiful day out. I hope you're having a beautiful day wherever you are, and we are very pleased and humbled that you have chosen to spend a few minutes with us this morning, maybe even more than a few, maybe like, you know, 3 hours. That's fine, too. We love you, and we welcome you. We also welcome you to join us in on the conversation. Join in on the conversation. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we have a lot to talk about this morning. A busy news day, as they say in the business. So we will get started. Panel at WAMC.org for you to weigh in. Let me introduce the group. First and foremost, WAMC's very own Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir. At your service. That's how I am. I'm at your service.
Excellent. Well, I am pleased you are here, and thank you very much. We will get to the conversation at hand here in just a moment. Let me finish up the introductions, and we go to former EPA Regional Administrator, Visiting Professor at Bennington College, President of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enck. Good morning, Judith.
Good morning. Election day is 73 days, 14 hours, and 46 minutes away, unless you vote early, which is an option. Good morning.
Good morning. When does early voting begin in New York State? That's all right.
We need to look that up.
Okay, we'll look that up. I asked that question because I was just asked it by my wife this morning. Aaron Pasitti is go ahead, Alan.
You won't have to look it up. We'll have 140 people telling us.
It was a spousal discussion this morning, so having an answer will help me.
Yeah, we want to get it exactly.
Spousal discussions are privileged. We all know that.
Are they privileged?
Well, I don't think you can't testify. I don't think, well, at least in the old movies, you couldn't testify against your wife or your husband.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. You know, how long have you and Roselle been married?
In September the 6th, we will be 50 years.
That's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful.
September 6th, 50 years.
She would.
That
she
calls
would,
for a lot she, of cake.
And she would tell you. It's been not that easy.
And for you and Mark, Judith?
I think 39 years.
39 years.
But it feels like yesterday.
You know, I'm at 26 years this year. I'll be at 26 years. Yeah, I know, baby, right. But I came a moment, there was a moment, and I think you'll appreciate this, Alan, there was a moment yesterday where the institution of marriage became perfectly crystallized to me. Marriage between husbands and wives and husbands and wives, it just became crystallized to
me. Husbands and husbands, wives and wives.
That's right. That's what I was saying. Yeah. Husbands, yeah. Wives, husbands and wives. So my question, we got a puppy. I mentioned that. And when we go in to put the puppy away at night into the crate, we hang up the leash on a hook, and then that way the next person can find it when they bring the dog out. So my wife goes in and she said, "Where's the leash?" And I said, "I don't know." And she said, "Well, where did you put it?" And I said, I don't know. And then I'm doing some mental calculations in my mind, and I said, "Well, I don't think I didn't bring the dog in last night, so I don't know where it is." And she said, "Well, I don't know why you can't put things back where they belong." And I said, "Well, I agree, that is bad." So then I look over, and there on the washer and dryer is the leash. And I said, "Well, look, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. You came in last night and put it on the washer and dryer." And she said, "Yes, I know that, because you wouldn't go near the washer and dryer." See, that's the perfect.
Oh, boy.
Excellent.
I was almost late coming down from the washer and dryer myself.
Isn't that like that is and we laughed, and I thought, okay, there you go. That's my I learn about the institution every single day. Aaron Pasitti, how are you and your dear wife getting along?
Wonderfully. So I'll throw out numbers while we're at it. We've been together 18 years this October, and I love doing laundry.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I mean, I don't do it that much because the leash is in the way. But I like it. Sure. Sienna Freeman Tolbert. Good morning, Sienna. How are you? Feel free to weigh in or not on this conversation.
Or just hang up.
Yeah. Or just, yes, run for the hills. You can do whatever you want.
I'm good. And I also have a new puppy. He's only 12 weeks. So I don't know what you're going through, Joe.
Are they the best? Just absolute best.
They are the best.
All right. Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you all here. Let us get started. Of course, the obvious starting place is the final night of the Democratic National Convention was last night. Joe Biden officially accepted the nomination and is the Democratic nominee for president of the United States. He gave a speech in Wilmington, Delaware, and it was very powerful, I thought, and was staged much. I think we were giving some criticism to the staging of the Kamala Harris speech on Wednesday night, and I thought this one was done really well because it was very intimate, and there was a closed-in shot on the former vice president, and it just looked really good. We also we heard from other candidates. We heard about the message. We heard a biography of the vice president. We heard from his family yesterday. So a lot going on. Alan, what did you think?
I thought he did very well. Very well. You know, as I have said before, Joe Biden is not John F. Kennedy, and Joe Biden is not Barack Obama. But Joe Biden gave a very, very good speech. I would say an A-minus speech last night. I just thought he spoke from the heart, and you could tell it, and it wasn't a forced speech in which he was trying to pretend that he had enthusiasm. Whatever he had, and I thought it was a good speech.
Judah, think.
Well, I loved the whole convention. I watched every hour. I was writing out postcards for this great woman running for Congress in West Virginia, Kathy Kunkel, so I could justify being glued to the TV, you know, for endless hours. I thought the whole convention was very good. It was very good production value. It was like the Summer Olympics of politics, and I thought Biden gave a very strong speech. You know, what I was listening for was climate change. He mentioned it three times.
Yeah.
I also thought he spoke directly to families who have lost loved ones or friends from COVID-19, and I think that is just so important and missing from our national dialogue. You know, you remember after terrible tragedies, there's a period of mourning and respect for people who've been killed. And here, you know, which is a mass casualty event, as I keep calling it, there's very little recognition of the suffering going on for the families who've lost loved ones. So I think he spoke to that, you know, very effectively. Of course, he's had terrible loss in his personal life. And it feels like, you know, he's the man for this moment. He can get the nation not only acknowledging grief, but also finally, you know, having competent leadership so more and more people don't continue to die at record numbers.
Aaron Pasitti.
Yeah, I agree with what Alan and Judith said. I think, you know, Biden presented himself as being very presidential, you know, understanding the situation, a command of, you know, the scale of these crises. So that was nice to see. I also kind of interpreted Biden's speech as a acknowledgement on his own part that he is a transitional candidate, that this isn't the transformative election a lot of progressive Democrats were looking for. I think Biden understands that. I think the, you know, selection of Kamala Harris was an acknowledgement that there's a new wave of Democrats coming up and that Biden is kind of passing the torch. So Maybe I'm wrong in that interpretation, but it did seem like he's willing to, you know, deal with the crises on hand. He understands his role as essentially creating the foundation for hopefully more transformative Democratic politicians in the future. And I think he's well equipped to do it. So he looked presidential. He sounded presidential. He did not engage in name calling. He didn't make his speech an anti-Trump referendum. I think the most important thing, and I hope to see it early on in the campaign, is some policies, some concrete policies about what he's going to do. And I think it's important for the progressive Democrats to hold him to that. So I think he's setting the stage nicely, and I look forward to seeing where it goes from here.
Sienna.
I love the buildup to Biden's speech. I liked how every day they did a question and answer session with Biden, which showed that he was listening to individuals on different topics. And then on the final day, it seemed like he responded to everything and he got the opportunity to state his policies and his positions. And I even wrote down that he said he has a plan, which is very Elizabeth Warren-ish, but it was very good to hear because that's going to be a stark contrast to next week when we're listening to see if the president currently has a plan to heal the country and to get us over this economic and public health issue. So it was really good. I thought he did a really good job.
This may be a cheap shot, but yes, that comes in contrast to a president who has now been asked three times of what his goals are for a second administration, and he has rather mangled the question every time and doesn't seem to have an answer to that. So it will be interesting to see if one is developed by next week. Judith?
Yeah, Joe, I'm interested in what you think of this. I thought Biden's speech last night sounded more like a presidential address rather than a campaign speech. And I think he's got to just keep that tone going for the next few weeks. And I am kind of terrified of the Republican National Convention next week. I'm sure the theme is American carnage again, but it's going to be bad because it would be bad to begin with, but now they must be really rattled with how effectively the Democratic National Convention came across. I think everyone should unplug their TV next week and take the children outside and just not be exposed to it.
Well, I'm watching. I know that, but go ahead.
Yeah, so am I. But just parents and grandparents, be careful.
CNN did a extended interview with Mike Pence this morning, which I watched. And if you watched it, you got a pretty good idea of what was coming. It's all going to be this mayhem in the streets, and we and the Democrats are behind it, and that's what they're going to be saying again and again and again. I have to say, as an aside, although there will be people who don't like this, that I have particular disgust for those people who are burning or looting, because I think in every way that that kind of thing happens, it only gives force to this terrible, president who is who has this country on a way to a sort of a fascism. So I must say, from the very beginning, I have been scant, really upset with those people who would endanger the election of somebody who is going to get rid of Donald Trump by doing these stupid things.
The obviously, I think Judith's right. We're going to see a lot of video of that. We're going to see in the coming week. And I don't know, given that I think the Democrats made the case, but they're going to have to make it again after the convention. Sienna, what do you think?
I think that the spirit and the hope of the DNC convention, I think it's going to last through the RNC. Maybe it's because I watched the wrong channel when I was watching the DNC. I was watching MSNBC, so I wasn't seeing maybe both parts. But I really think that everyone feels really energized. And I think after hearing Michelle and Barack and Hillary come out and say, this is your time and we have to realize how serious this is, I think they really put a good message out there about what's going to happen if we have another 4 years. And so everyone's really set up, has that knowledge in their head going into the RNC next week. I think everyone really knows, and we're listening to see if there's anything that Trump can say to counter what Obama says, to counter what Clinton says. But I don't think they will be able to do that. And I think they're going to leave the country feeling very empty and very not hopeful for another 4 years with Trump. So I'm encouraged by this convention, actually. I was very encouraged by it.
Just a moment of clarification. I said endanger the election of Donald Trump a few seconds ago. I meant the unelection or the getting rid of Donald Trump.
Yeah,
thank you.
Endangering the, or keeping him from being reelected, right? Yeah,
yeah,
that's how I took it. Yeah. So my, Judith, you make the point about the presidential looking nature of the speech. And I think that was what was missing perhaps from, and I don't want to harp on this, but on from Kamala's speech on Wednesday, I thought her speech was amazing. I just thought the staging of it was odd, of having this open, cavernous convention hall and you know, a couple of reporters sitting around in chairs, socially distanced with state names and flags littered around. But I thought that the tight shot on Biden made it look like he was giving the speech from the Resolute desk in the White House.
Yeah, well, you're in the biz. You know how they're supposed to do those things. I wasn't distracted by, the Senator Harris's speech. It did kind of look like she was in a Costco or, a large warehouse somewhere.
Yeah.
But
I think she may have been, actually. But go ahead. Yeah.
It didn't distract me from, telling her narrative. I mean, I follow politics. I was not aware of all of the pieces of her life, and I'm even more excited after hearing that speech. But overall, I thought the staging of the whole convention, I mean,
yes,
it could have
agree.
Been a nightmare,
right.
And they really pulled it off.
Alan, I wanted to ask you, I jotted this down last night as I was watching, a question to ask you, which is this. So we look at this of as you just said, of trying to keep Donald Trump from being reelected. Do you think the presentation that took place over the past four nights not only helped those two leading the ticket, but also helped in House and Senate races across this country for the Democrats?
I do. I think that this is going to be, and I've been saying this for a long time, this is going to be a monumental year in terms of rejecting Trump. We saw the proof of that, Joe, when Mitch McConnell basically said to his troops, or was said to have said by people in the know, save yourselves. you can be critical of Trump now. And I think that this is going to be a very crucial time. I mean, you get somebody, who is marginal and who people are for or not for, but this time their behinds are tied to Trump, and I think as Trump goes down, so will they.
You mentioned Mitch McConnell,
we're going to say the same thing.
To go to a break, but Mitch McConnell will not be taking part in the convention next week because he's trying to save himself and will be campaigning in Kentucky. We do have to take a break, and we will be back. We'll continue on with this conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, Aaron Pasitti, and Sienna Freeman Tolbert. We'll be right back. Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, Aaron Pasitti, and Sienna Freeman Tolbert making up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters as always. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let's go to a couple of the letters. Bob said, good morning, panel. I thought Biden sounded very with it and cogent. His words were weighted and are heartfelt. He sounds intelligent and determined to change our present course of disasters by Trump's ineptness. I agree with Alan. Even with all of the subterfuge, he loses by a landslide, meaning, I assume, Trump. So that was one thing that was brought out. I mean, the rap that the Republicans and especially the president have been putting on Joe Biden is that he is, that he has dementia and is not with it and is just sort of drooling in his basement. There was certainly, that was a very strong speech, and I think anyone watching it would put a lot of that, would see and put a lot of that to rest. Alan?
Well, I wanted to go back for a moment, if I may, Joe, to Mitch McConnell.
Yes.
Look, these guys pull like crazy. And I have a feeling Mitch McConnell is one of the most unpopular people, you know, in this United States of America. And so when we decide that he has to be back in Kentucky fighting for his election, it's also the fact that they know he ain't going to do anything for him. Now, I watched Mike Pence, as I said, on the Today Show this morning, and who was really taken apart by whatever the guy's name is, the host. And there was a sense that I had that they were going to go extremely negative and that they were not going to in any way present a program other than fund the police, which is something that they're going to be very big on. So I don't know if that answers any of the part of the question, but that's what I'm observing.
But you know what doesn't make sense about McConnell being in Kentucky? Isn't the Republican convention going to be like the Democrats? Like you just zoom in?
Yeah.
Like, do they not have internet in Kentucky? That is just such a lame excuse. I mean,
yeah,
he can't
so it's
get
lame
to a computer.
Because. Right. Yeah.
I think it's to Alan's point, though, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It's lame that
he
they don't
want
to
be associated.
And by the way, I don't think he wants much association with Trump while he's at it.
Yeah, and that's the Senate Majority Leader. It says a lot. We got this letter from... there's nothing there. Okay, never mind. Russ says it's a bit much when a presidential candidate claims that he will bring light to the darkness. I would have settled for one who brings competence to captive agencies. Well, you know, yes, of course. Then... We got, this is a good one. This is off topic, admittedly off topic, and I don't usually read off topic emails because they bring us off topic. But I do love this one, and I wondered about this out loud in my car when I was driving home yesterday. Good morning, esteemed crew. I was wondering if Alan had an opinion about Nancy Pelosi supporting Joe Kennedy in the Massachusetts Senate primary. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some things I don't know anything about, but there's got to be a reason. And one could only imagine that Senator Markey probably ticked off off Nancy Pelosi over something, which he, by the way, he can do on a fairly regular basis. He can get people angry at him for no good reason. The answer is I don't know, but there is something about those Kennedys.
Yeah, it did seem a little surprising, especially considering, as per your interview with Tim Versalotti yesterday in the Congressional Corner, that the last poll that we have out from UMass has them has Markey up by 18 points. Now, I don't know how accurate that is, but that's still...
No, I think it's accurate.
Yeah.
I think Markey was right. As we used to say on Fire Island, now that, you know, Rosemary isn't here, one rides the waves. One gets on their surfboard or their raft, in my case, and you ride the waves. I think Markey was riding the waves for a while. There was a general sense out there among many people that the Kennedy name wasn't good enough to do what it needed to do. And he has and Markey has taken on a very left wing, persona in order to win this thing. And AOC and others are endorsing him. Nevertheless, I sense this thing is really tightening, as per the old saying that in many houses in Massachusetts, there are two pictures on the wall. One of them is God, and the other one is of JFK. So we'll see what people do when they get in there.
Well, I think there's no question Markey's going to win, and he deserves to win. I mean, I think he's just been an extraordinary leader on climate change. I think people in Massachusetts generally are happy that he co-sponsored the Green New Deal with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I think the Pelosi endorsement is bizarre, And next time establishment Democrats say that, you know, you shouldn't have primaries from the left, I think this will be, people will remind Nancy Pelosi of this unusual endorsement. I don't think Kennedy has made the case at all as to why you replace such a skilled and effective U.S. senator. I mean, he's running just because he can run. You know, if he really cares about the country, he can stay in the House and do really good work. It's not like his family name entitles him to a Senate seat. So I was very disappointed in the Pelosi endorsement. And I think you are right that there's something more to this. It's not just based on who would be the best senator for Massachusetts, because Markey's been an outstanding senator.
Well, there are many people who disagree with you about that, to be fair. You know, I had a tough time filling out my ballot, which I already did. You know, Markey had a reputation for being invisible and not being around an awful lot. So when you say he's outstanding, I mean, I expect that from you because of his endorsement of the Green New Deal. I think I get that part of it. But, you know, in Massachusetts, where I just happen to live, and from where I am talking to you right now, there is a sense that Markey did not come around an awful lot.
Yeah, well, that may be true, but I think that you know that better than I, because you live in the state. But
I think
if you look at his, but Alan, if you look at his record, he's really been strong on so many issues over the years. I don't think there's much that can be criticized there. And it is just weird to have someone just running because they can run. I don't think Kennedy has really articulated how he would be different from Markey.
Well, I interviewed Kennedy at some length, if one listens to the Congressional Corner. And, you know, I have to say, I was impressed by how articulate he was, number one. And number two, mm-hmm. how he kept saying he didn't feel a sense, because I asked him that very question. Do you have a sense of entitlement? Absolutely not. I do not.
Yeah, well, of course he's going to say that.
Well, yeah, but, well, how can you dismiss
why
it?
Why else?
Yeah. Anyway, seems to me that I remember way back when with Markey. Now, this has nothing to do with my feelings about Markey, by the way. But way back when there was a discussion of funding of public radio, remarkably, this Democratic then congressman, I believe, had questions about whether or not public radio deserved support because they could do it on their own. It's something that has always been in the back of my head.
Hmm. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to some letters. Overall, great convention, says Tom. Believe Democrats could have been clearer to challenge Trump's law and order message to simply communicate you can't have law and order without justice. Harris would have been the right spokesperson for this counter message to highlight the lack of justice, even by our Department of Justice. Sienna, any thoughts on that?
I completely agree. I wish there would have been. There was a nice segment on racial injustice, but I wish there would have been more. I wish that Kamala would have invoked more of her legal analysis during her speech, and she kind of brushed over it, even though she has a massive, you know, history as Attorney General and DA. I wish there would have been more of that, more talking directly about what's her plan for the police reform situation.
Let's go to the letter from Mike, who says, last night I felt good for the first time in almost 4 years. You don't realize how much has been lost until you think about repairing the damage. But the other side of that is that you couldn't really understand how much we had to lose until we were truly at risk of losing it. Democracy is precious. We must protect it. We must empower decent human beings. We can never again put a small person in the White House. Long live the Republic. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We do have many more letters on the DNC, and then a lot of people want to talk about Steve Bannon, so we will do that as well. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
My happy heart.
Welcome back to the roundtable.
So,
yes?
I just want you to know that, like you, I looked him up, Marky, and he has been, at least in this round, huge proponent of public broadcasting. And so maybe I got that wrong. It's sitting in the back of my head somewhere.
Yeah. Well, he has a long career, so who knows what was on early. Yeah, I didn't find... I found the same thing you did, I think, but we'll keep looking. All right, let's see. Sue chimes in and says, I found Joe Biden was reaching out to groups that have been touched by adversity. I found the segment of the boy who stuttered very touching because it hit home for me as my dad struggled with stuttering all his life but did very well. That was a very poignant moment. I thought a very beautiful moment of the convention last night. Also, Michael says, in a nutshell, I'm delighted with Biden's nomination acceptance speech and the speeches leading up to it last night. Would I trust him? Yes. Would I be confident that he will serve the people of the United States? Yes. Would I feel secure that he understands the U.S. government and state governments? Yes. Would I feel confident in his leadership? Yes. There's the checklist that many people have before them. Mike says, good morning, good Friday panel, is what it says. Alan, with all due respect, no legitimate prosecutor. No, try that again. Take two. Alan, with all due respect, no legitimate protester is out there burning and looting. Those people are criminals with no political agenda or could be radical leftists or right-wingers hoping for anarchy. The actual protesters are legitimately out there standing up for all Americans and are making progress. These protesters are patriotic Americans serving our democracy.
Right of reply, I couldn't agree with you more. The legitimate protesters are really doing the job and are where they should be. It's the few creeps who are burning things down. You may ascribe it to the Republicans being nasty, or we may just talk about how this is happening in our cities and the rest of it. You can say it's the Trumpers who are doing this. But, we've had a lot of experience with this kind of thing. It's disgusting. And I think whoever's doing it, shouldn't be doing it.
Right. And isn't the point, though, that this is certainly going to be exploited by the Republicans and certainly be exploited next
Without
week
question.
During the convention? Yeah.
Without question. It is.
Doreen says, to Alan's point that Trump is a lying liar who lies, what about Trump's Twitter claim yesterday that Dems required an ID card with a picture to get into the Democratic convention, but yet refused to require a picture ID for voting? Do his supporters know and or care that it was a virtual convention, and or will they just perpetuate the lie?
Good letter.
Yep. Let's see. Carrie says, I agree with Sienna that the Republican convention will probably make people feel empty and small. People these days really want to feel good about something, so they will remember that the Democratic convention was simply more uplifting. A lot of folks I know watched the convention this week simply to see fellow Americans in other places talking about their lives. David says, Joe Kennedy's vote to build more nuclear weapons was not only inexcusable, the fact that he said he voted yes by mistake was truly bizarre. We go to this letter from Nicole, who says, why aren't we all on our knees thanking Joe and Kamala for going against the madman Trump? Cleaning up his mess seems like an insurmountable job to me, to say nothing of the barbs and insults they will have to endure. I just say amen. Yeah, I mean, there's another way of asking that question, which is, who in the name of God would want that job? But yes, thank goodness they're the ones who want it.
I will say, Joe, I think that's one of the most compelling arguments for Joe, is that he did it with Barack Obama years ago.
Yes,
and
that's right.
He knows how to do it. And I thought that was so compelling. I thought that was just so persuasive.
Yes, he made that point in his speech, and I agree with you. It was a very good point. Also, Peter writes, dear panel, I do believe Joe Kennedy has said he is an anti-vaxxer. Sorry, but that does not fly with this Massachusetts voter. Is that true? Do we know that to be true? I don't know.
I know one guy. I know one Kennedy was. One of the younger Kennedys was.
That was Bobby Kennedy. And
that's what I think.
His message is so bizarre. He was speaking out about the problems of mercury in vaccines, their Mirasol, and then that was portrayed as being against vaccines. I mean, I think he's not handled this well at all.
That's Robert Kennedy Jr.
Robert Kennedy Jr.
The environmentalist.
And the headline was, called out by his own family for his anti-vax conspiracy.
Then Representative Joe Kennedy, in an interview with Yahoo News 2 days ago, disavowed his family ties to the anti-vax movement. So not a personal platform for him. Let's go to Bill, who says Nancy Pelosi's endorsement of Kennedy may have a lot to do with his fundraising prowess, as well as Markey aligning with AOC and other Green New Dealers. He was offered the chair of the DCCC for his ability to raise funds. Follow the money. Also, we go to Portia about Markey. He co-created the Green New Deal. How can anyone justify at this time of our history and climate crisis voting him out of office? And we go to Susan, who says, I still support Pelosi, but not on Markey, who I think is a good progressive candidate, and I don't like it that she's against including a vote on stimulus relief tomorrow when they vote on funding the post office, despite 114 representatives signing the letter urging her to do this. Then Nicole says, I got to Nicole before. Mike says, even Karl Rove praised Biden's speech. Also, Bannon's arrest is no surprise. All of Trump's team are snake oil salesmen. The bigger story, I think, is the Chinese billionaire's boat that Bannon was arrested on. This billionaire is also a snake oil salesman. Shocking. Anyone?
Yeah, wow. I thought that added. Go ahead.
No, you, please.
Well, he was arrested on a 150-foot yacht, which belongs to this Chinese billionaire who is also wanted in China. That just added a lot of color to the arrest. And, I mean, is anyone surprised that Steve Bannon engaged in fraud? I mean, that was kind of like the least surprising outcome with Steve Bannon. But I instantly thought, does this explain why Trump and Bill Barr fired U.S. Attorney in the Southern District Jeffrey Berman this past June? Remember that Friday night firing, and then he only backed down when he was given an assurance that his career staffer number two would take his position rather than a political ally of the president's. So I hope the Times does more digging on, and I'm just speculating here, is the Bannon case at all related to Jeffrey Berman being fired?
Aaron?
Steve Bannon's arrest is honestly like the perfect metaphor for the past 4 years. You have
Schadenfreude.
It couldn't have happened to a nicer person. You have somebody who has stoked a whole bunch of nativist, thoughts and emotions in the population, has abused the federal government for personal gain. It was so fitting that he was arrested on a 150-foot yacht. And I hope he gets what's coming to him. And I hope the people who he defrauded, even though I don't agree with their position, if you're being defrauded, you don't know that you're being defrauded. I hope that engenders some type of rethinking about the whole Trump clan and what they're doing and how they're using the government for personal enrichment. That was very clear, when Trump was elected, that here is somebody who has no particular ideology aside from, wanting to be adored and profiting from whatever he can, to think that he would surround himself with people who thought differently was just preposterous. So,
your point is so well taken, Aaron, which is that how many people who are surrounding him are either in jail or are on their way to jail? Unbelievable. When you contrast that with what Obama went through, there was nothing.
When I saw this story yesterday, it just stuck out to me that it was just so perfect that it was Steve Bannon. But then you start thinking about the whole other trail of people, like Judith just mentioned, and not that those aren't important, but I think the ban and arrest and the whole, you know, fraud scheme just perfectly crystallizes the whole, the real ideology of the Trump administration.
But not his campaign manager going to jail, you know, yeah. You know, the head guy.
There's kind of a greatest hits there, isn't there?
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, take your pick. But for me personally, the whole Bannon thing, like, I'm not going to lie, I laughed when I saw it. And I was like, good. I'm happy this finally happened.
Sarcasm alert. Kind of, but he can't be blamed for Trump can't be blamed for Bannon. He didn't know him.
Yeah, I think I met him once in the hallway, and I didn't.
He didn't know about the
scam or something, right?
I didn't notice him. He was wearing a mask, and that's very strange to me. I don't know.
Well, I just want to point out that there are 8 Trump associates who have either been arrested or convicted. I think familiar names, you know, Rick Gates, Flynn, Michael Cohen, etc. And I think we're going to have to hold the Trump Alumni Association meetings in federal prisons for many years.
Oh, Judith, they're not going to get many years.
But you know, Joe, the federal judge in New York, I'm not good with names, who just ruled on, you know, the Cy Vance matter and said you have to give them the tax returns.
Yes.
That guy really, really was having none of it. It was an exemplary ruling, and I hope everybody will read it.
Yeah, well, in fact, we'll talk about that when we come back because it's a really interesting story itself. We just have about a minute here, and but real quick, I'm very quickly trying to find the name, Alan, but I'm having trouble doing the quick part.
Name schmink.
Victor Marrero, federal district court in Manhattan, marked another setback for the president in his year-long fight to block the subpoena. He Thursday rejected President Trump's latest effort to block the Manhattan district attorney from obtaining his tax returns, roundly dismissing Mr. Trump's arguments that the prosecutor's grand jury subpoena was, quote, wildly overbroad and issued in bad faith. The conflict has already reached the Supreme Court once and could end up there again, as Mr. Trump's lawyer quickly filed papers saying he would appeal. The legal wrangling means an ultimate decision is unlikely before the November presidential election, but we did talk about that right after the Supreme Court decision, that saying that it would be very unlikely. Let's take a break. We'll go back. I want to talk a little bit more about the Steve Bannon story. We'll talk about this story about the tax returns as well. And, of course, we'll include your letters. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will be right back on this Friday morning right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Aaron Pasitti, and Sienna Freeman Tolbert. I promised at least 2 of our panel members that they could have a moment to talk about issues that were important to them. Aaron, you have a gig coming up.
That is correct. My bluegrass band, Big Stone Gap, is playing at the Bennington Museum tonight, and that's at 75 Main Street in Bennington, Vermont, from 5 to 8 p.m. And as it'll be outside, and as of now, it is our last gig of 2020. So if you're looking to enjoy nice weather, a nice museum, and some semi-nice music, come out and see us tonight.
So, and we can do that safely bring chairs and stuff, that kind of thing?
That is my understanding, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Just got to check. And then, Judith, how is the single-use plastic bag ban going?
Well, explaining that I don't have the social life that Aaron does, the highlight of my day yesterday was when a state judge in New York upheld New York's ban on plastic bags. It was challenged by the plastic bag manufacturers, but effective. The state says they'll start enforcing it within 30 days. So effective in 30 days, there should be no more single-use plastic bags handed out in stores across New York State. Now, some stores like Price Chopper Market 32 did an excellent thing and stopped using plastic bags on August 1st. Hannaford is still handing out plastic bags, but they cannot do that after 30 days. So this is a big, big environmental win and a sigh of relief, although I thought the industry case was pretty darn weak.
So I guess I don't understand, because is this, we can do this now in New York because the numbers are so low? Because, I mean, the reason originally they weren't doing it and they weren't enforcing the ban was because they were concerned about COVID.
Yeah, not right. So the law took effect March 1st. And 2 days before that, the plastic bag industry sued because it had nothing to do with COVID. They just didn't like the law because they want to keep making plastic bags. And then there was a delay in hearing the case because the courts were closed. But there's no scientific data that reusable bags is a source of the virus. I do urge people to make sure their bags are clean, wash them with hot water and soap if you can, to kind of relieve any concerns by store clerks. You can pack your own groceries. You know, store clerks are handling money all day. Touching reusable bags is not a COVID risk. So a lot of the issues got conflated, but the lawsuit had nothing to do with COVID. It was challenging the state's ability to ban plastic bags. So most stores should now allow you to bring your own reusable bags into the store.
All right. Anybody else want to have anything?
Yeah, I just want to tell you, in Great Barrington, the town had passed a no plastic bag rule, and then they relaxed it when COVID came. You know, theoretically, I think what was bothering a lot of people was the idea that they did not do a thorough wash of their reusable bags. But it's back now.
Oh, good.
It's been reinstated. Yay. And it's there. On the other hand, I was thinking about this yesterday when you go to buy, you know, 5 pounds of sweet potatoes or something like that, you put it in a plastic bag, but not that kind of plastic bag, not the kind you check out with. Right, Judith?
Right.
Correct. The law allows for stores to still have the produce bags. There are a couple exemptions, but, you know, New York, I can't speak to the numbers in Massachusetts off the top of my head, but New York uses a staggering 22 million plastic bags every single year. I'm sorry, 23 billion plastic bags, like checkout bags, are used every single year in New York. And so this is one of those laws that once it's fully in effect, people will see, you know, the benefits immediately. You're not going to see plastic bags littered in your neighborhoods and in streams and rivers. So 23 billion bags a year in New York should be going away effective in about 30 days.
So is there any half-life? In other words, we know the oceans are filled with this stuff, and we know whales are choking and all the rest of it. So is there any point that these mounds of plastic disappear?
They last for centuries. And what will happen with like a plastic bag or a plastic water bottle, if it gets in the water, it breaks. It's like a paper shredder. It breaks up into little pieces and become microplastics that are available for fish and wildlife to eat. But if it's just left on its own, it can take centuries for a petroleum-based plastic bag to degrade.
All right. So I realize I'm going to go off here for a second, but and so please forgive me, but I just have a question because Alan was asking this, and I think it was good. So I ended up buying shoes from Nike the other day that are used from Flyknit, which is made from recycled content. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about these? And is this good or is this bad?
Is it a reusable bag?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
They use leftover materials and recycled polyester and recycled foam. And I think it's, what is TPU?
I don't know what TPU is.
Well, they, no. 75% so, TPU, and I.
Well,
I,
we gotta find that out.
Hey, Joe, yeah. what size shoes do you wear?
It's a size 15, sir.
15, and I wear 7.5.
You could put your shoes in my shoes for safe travel.
Now, my theory is that you should pay by the size.
Oh, I do. I do.
Oh, is that right? Your shoes, yes, you do.
Plus
you more because
yes. Oh, yes.
Interesting.
By a good $80, I pay more.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. Yep. All right. So I'm interested in this idea of sustainable materials and clothing, Judith. So thank you for helping me on that.
Yeah, I can look into that. Yeah. Most, plastic recycling is a complete failure. It's only an 8% recycling rate nationwide. So you do have some companies that are trying to use more products, recycled content, but it's a little dicey with plastics.
All right, let's go back to the discussion at hand. And although that was a very nice diversion, and I thank you for it, let me...
And I just want to point out that the guy in The Graduate was right.
All right, yeah.
We've been trying to...
You have to remind me about that.
Hoffman.
I'm sorry.
Well, you may remember, our hero is talking to the guy around the pool.
Yes.
Who says, let me let you in on the next big thing, and it's plastics.
Oh, right,
and
okay.
I got you.
Yes, okay.
We've been trying to get in touch with Dustin Hoffman to do a public service announcement saying it's not plastics. So we found his agent, but oddly, they're not calling us back at Beyond Plastics. But I think that would be a really cool public service announcement.
What a great moment in WAMC Roundtable history that we learned something that we would have had no understanding about. That's just great.
And Susan wants to keep the conversation going because she just wrote in and said, but Judith, what about plastic garbage bags?
They are not banned. You can keep using plastic garbage bags.
But what can you use instead if you don't want to use plastic garbage bags?
If you don't want to use them, paper bags. During the pandemic,
hard to get to
hard.
Go ahead.
Plastic garbage bags is one of the hardest things. They're not easy alternatives, but you can use paper grocery bags if you are so inclined.
As Alan often reminds us, as if on cue, TPU is thermoplastic polyurethane, according to Brian, our listener in charge. So cool. Well, I'm apparently wearing that now, so there you go. Barbara wants to know who wants to start a pool and how long it is before Bannon gets pardoned.
Well, he has to be convicted first, so the timing may work out here nicely. I don't think he'll be. I don't think he can be pardoned before there's a conviction, and the conviction will probably come after
you could
mid-January.
I think you could,
Sienna. What do we know about that?
I don't believe he can be pardoned before he's convicted, but I'm not sure. That's interesting. Because right now he's pled not guilty, so he's innocent and proven guilty. Right. So there's nothing to pardon from,
Did he go back on the yacht, do you think? just wondering. Let's see. We got this from, a lot of people writing in about TPU, so thank you on that. Brian says, thank you, Judith, for your sustaining positivity. I'm so happy to be a New Yorker knowing that the laws we pass here are viewed around the world as possible case studies on how to build back better. Europe has looked to New York on how it responded to cigarette bans in the 90s. Let's lead the future in green technology. All right. I do want to go back for a moment to the story about the president's tax returns. We mentioned the fact that this was, we don't know how much we're going to know. We probably won't know much more before the election. Cy Vance, a Democrat, has been seeking 8 years of Mr. Trump's personal and business returns and other financial records as part of an investigation into the president's business practices. The Supreme Court, in a landmark decision last month, denied Mr. Trump's initial argument that a sitting president had immunity from criminal investigation, but that ruling opened the door for the president to return to the lower court in Manhattan and raise other objections to the subpoena. Mr. Trump renewed the fight, but in his decision, Judge Marrero dismissed the president's new objection, saying that the judicial process did not transform automatically into an incidence of incapacitating harassment and ill will merely because the proceedings potentially may implicate the president. That's some fancy court language, Sienna.
That is some fancy language. Before we go to taxes, though, I do want to talk about Bannon really quickly.
Yes.
I just wanted to point out, I wanted to say that it's important to note that this is coming from Trump's base. So we're talking about Florida. The Florida Attorney General was looking into this matter, and they're the one that pushed it up, and they received a lot of complaints from consumers, and they pushed it up to the FBI level. So I think this will have a really big impact on the election, because we're talking about Trump's base was affected by this, people who contributed to the wall, who wanted to, you know, further his cause. So I think it's important to point that out. Like, this is, I think Aaron was saying why this, the Bannon arrest was so shocking. I think he's correct. I think Bannon arrest is because it involves Trump's base. So I think that's why it's the most important arrest so far.
Please go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, no, I was going to go to the taxes, but go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I just want to say the time to watch for real mischief is between the time Trump loses the presidency and leaves the office in terms of his pardoning power.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Go ahead.
I agree, Alan, because even Hillary said it in the interview. I heard her, and she says we're going to need a lot of lawyers. and that's what she was saying. I think it's going to come, like I said before on a prior show, it's going to come to right before the election. I know there's a group called the Election Protection. It's a whole group of attorneys who are going to be watching and monitoring and assisting people to make sure that they are able to exercise their right. And then afterwards, there's going to be a lot of litigation. And so we're looking to our attorney generals and our states to protect the process. Mm-hmm. So that's what it's going to come down to. And we know, especially in New York, that they're willing to protect the process, as evidenced by the fact that our attorney general is acting on the NRA. So I know that they're moving in that department. So I'm encouraged by the legal community.
The embattled Postmaster General at the hearings when he's being grilled this morning said that he believed in voting. Talk about trying to get out from under. He believed in voting by mail, and he has done it.
Okay.
And he also said that the mail sorting machines that have been removed will not be put back in place before Election Day.
Exactly.
So he's already done a lot of damage. And I think a lot of people last week thought, oh, you know, we're out of the woods here, because he said he would stop those practices. But he's not fixing the damage he already put in place.
And Judith, I think a lot of people got that right from the beginning. We all understood that that was the question that needed to be asked.
There was some reporting earlier this week. I know Bob Griffin mentioned it on Wednesday, that some of the machines have already been. I know there were reports
destroyed.
That they were destroyed. So I know some say they're just like in the parking lots, but that a lot of those machines have been destroyed, which is concerning. Hard to put that back.
Real quickly, Joe, I always wondered why we rely on the U.S. Postal Service. Why don't the local government, use another mailing service, FedEx, UPS? I mean, the USPS is one of the few federal agencies that's in a competitive market. And I wonder why they haven't been approached by other, you know, carriers.
By UPS and say, we'll do it.
Yeah, or FedEx and say, we'll do it. We'll take care of this for you. Give them a lower price. It's very, you know.
What that would do is pull the financial underpinnings out from beneath the Postal Service, right? In other words, if we give it over to private business to do, that's one more nail in the coffin of the Post Office.
And I think that's what a lot of this is inspired by, is a desire by the Trump administration to privatize mail delivery. What I'm struck by is the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. He's only been in his position since June.
Yes.
And it's still August. And look at all the damage he's done. It's just amazing.
It doesn't take long to start a fire.
Right. Yeah.
We have some letters about pardons. I just want to, they are all basically the same. So I'll just read one or two of them because we'll put it beside us. But Richard Nixon was pardoned by Gerald Ford before he was ever convicted of anything, Howard mentions. And then Denise said Reagan pardoned Caspar Weinberger before he was charged in the Iran-Contra affair. And Diane actually gives us a law that says a federal person can be issued a federal pardon can be issued prior to the start of a legal case or inquiry, prior to any indictments being issued for unspecified offenses, and prior to or after a conviction for a federal crime. The Supreme Court ruled in United States versus Wilson in 1833 that a pardon could be rejected by the convict. So,
well, and remember, I stand corrected.
No, I thought I knew it.
You did.
Right, that's right. But you know, let us not forget that a president, I'm pretty sure I'm right about this too, can pardon himself.
Back to Bannon, though, I think Sienna's point is so crucial. Who are the people who were defrauded? People who were giving voluntary donations to build the wall along the Mexican border. And so a bunch of them, you know, didn't they raise $25 million?
That's right.
They're probably very unhappy. It's not, you know, it's not like I would give money to that. So it's risky for Trump because it's his voters that sent in $25 each to build the darn wall.
During the Watergate scandal, President Nixon's lawyer suggested that a self-pardon would be legal, while the Department of Justice issued a memorandum opinion on August 5th, 1974, stating that a president cannot pardon himself.
Well, that's the Justice Department. And as you know, where there's a vacuum, Trump tends to move in.
Right.
And ignore norms as opposed to law. And here, you know, you got a piece of paper from the Justice Department, but that doesn't mean an awful lot.
I think Trump's going to just move to Moscow when this is over.
I wouldn't be surprised, Judith, to see him move somewhere. I know that you were saying it was sarcastic, but if what the New York Times is uncovering in this massive investigation of theirs turns out to be so, and if he turns out to really have cheated on his taxes and everything else, one would wonder whether it wouldn't be a good idea to get lost fast.
Mm-hmm. Good point. I know we've all been waiting with bated breath. I apologize for it taking us an hour and 16 minutes to get to this. However, there are jobless numbers out. We have Aaron Pasitti on the program. I know you're waiting.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're ready.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Here we go. Go, Aaron. What do we know?
Initial claims for unemployment insurance, which is a kind of a good leading indicator for where the economy and the labor market is headed, started to creep up after, I believe it was 2 weeks of decline. So, you know, it's nothing major. It's something to keep an eye on. But the fact that the claims are still so elevated in numbers points to this being an extremely long crawl out of the hole created by the pandemic. The Federal Reserve also released minutes of their previous meeting, and the big takeaway was just how desperate sounding the Fed was for Congress to take action, because the Federal Reserve can only do so much. They're limited in what tools they have, and Congress obviously has a lot more leeway in terms of stimulating the economy, providing help to families and individuals in need or without a job. And it's rare that the Fed becomes so vocal and discusses that to the extent they did.
I have a question.
The other interesting story, and I know. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question. If the gentleman will stand for a question, here is the question. Obviously, the argument that that the Trump people are making is if there hadn't been a pandemic, we were doing extremely well. And therefore, we should get credit for what was going on as opposed to what is going on. Could you comment?
Sure. Well, the first thing is that Trump inherited an economy that was doing well to begin with. So to attribute that to the Trump administration is fanciful thinking at best. His lone economic achievement was the $1.5 trillion Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which really was just, you know, taking money from, you know, middle and upper middle class people and giving it to super wealthy individuals. So, no, that's not even on its even taking that at face value is a preposterous statement. Secondly, the economy has not been doing well. When you look at certain measures during the Trump administration, also during the Obama administration, going all the way back to the Ford administration, income inequality has been creeping upward for over 40 years. So if you look at, you know, traditional statistics like the unemployment rate or GDP growth, those paint a very different picture of the economy than what's been happening beneath the surface, and that is a very real struggle to, you know, maintain your standard of living when incomes for, you know, the bulk of the population have been stagnant. You see the slow disintegration of the social safety net, the push to privatize government organizations, which is really just code word for using the government to transfer money to shareholders and executives of those corporations. In that context, the economy has not been doing well and has not been serving the interest of most people or most workers. The economy has been doing exceptionally well for, you know, people making six figures and particularly for people who are making seven figures and above. So, no, I don't agree with the claim that the economy was doing well when Trump took office and he should be given credit for that. The other interesting story, and this is something that Alan mentioned, and I'll keep this short.
Just have about a minute before
the S&P. Sure. The S&P recovered all of the losses it's made since February. And how does a roaring stock market jive with an economy that's slowly crumbling? And the answer is that the Federal Reserve has taken unprecedented action in terms of being able to buy corporate bonds, which is something they normally don't do. So what the Fed has done is essentially created a backstop to prevent corporate bankruptcies. So you have the Federal Reserve saying, we're going to do all we can to make sure this doesn't happen, so stock prices go up. It's not a reflection of how the economy is doing. It's a reflection of corporate earnings and what the Federal Reserve is doing to preserve that.
So in the minute we have left, we're waiting then for the jobs report will come out for August, and that'll be next week. Is that when, or 2 weeks?
It's the first Friday of every month, and I don't know if that's probably going to be delayed because of the Labor Day holiday. So
okay, all right.
Unfortunately, I don't have a concrete answer to that. But it'll be early September one way or the other.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and do our final round together on this Friday morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Ank, Aaron Pacitti, and Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Keep them short, keep them to the point, and keep them coming.
Support for
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. I'm sorry, I was yelling at the television set. this hearing is really something, I must say. The Postmaster General is testifying before a Republican-led Senate committee, and it's a virtual hearing, and it's very interesting. I'll just say that of what he has to say, and just testified as I was watching that he was unaware that 700 collection boxes were removed. So I wonder how that happened then. But okay.
And you know where the sorting machines were removed in states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Texas.
What a coinky ding.
All the swing states.
Well, and he also said that they're working toward getting things back to normal. I don't know what that means either. But anyway.
And the Postmaster General announced that, he wants more. I believe he said that he wants to raise prices, which will mean a lot fewer people will use the mail. It's
yeah, that's right.
Consistent. Hey, Joe, if I could, please. I just want to mention something that Roselle just pointed out to me, and that is that the Berkshire Eagle has endorsed Joe Kennedy for the United States Senate.
Oh.
And that is interesting on the basis that he is a progressive as opposed to, you know, and that, you know, basically Markey hadn't been there all that long. I'm not going to comment on this piece for a number of reasons, but it is interesting that the Eagle has decided that they are the progressive voice here.
May I realize you're not going to comment, but will I be allowed a follow-up question?
Absolutely.
Okay. Would have they endorsed in the Richard Neal Alex Morse race?
Okay. They have not, which is interesting because they say they're for the progressive in the race, and the self-styled progressive in that race is Alex Morse, as opposed to the guy who I so admire, Richie Neal. So they may be setting up for that. I don't know. We'll see.
And meanwhile, the primary is on the 1st of September. So
it is. It's right around the corner.
10 days away, so not too far. All right. Let's go to, let's see. Let's talk about fire. Yes, we haven't had enough bad news. California wildfires, and this is an interesting story. Obviously something that we're getting quite used to in California, tragically, but California wildfires more than double in size and force, degrading air quality, tens of thousands evacuating. Judith, I did want you to touch a little bit on this and how it fits into our overall concern about climate change.
Yeah, it's very much related to climate change. You've got very, very high temperatures. You've got dry wood. California is exhibit A on what's going on. I mean, it's a real emergency in California. It comes about a week after the highest temperature ever recorded in human history. It was 130 degrees in Death Valley. And you've got just tragic information on ice caps melting all over the world, contributing to sea level rise. And I just think this is such an example that we've got to deal with, you know, more than one emergency at a time. Obviously, COVID is front of mind and demands urgent attention, but the climate crisis is just getting worse and worse. And I think, you know, a sad illustration of that, I read an article about for people living in California, the mask that you're supposed to wear to avoid exposure to smoke from fires is a different mask than you're supposed to wear to avoid COVID exposure. So what are these poor people supposed to do in terms of just protecting themselves? But this is, I mean, every day it is example after example of this situation, and I'm beyond worried. And the only real thing we can do is get Trump out of the White House and get Biden, who every month gets better and better with his climate change positions. Just got to get him in office. Get all these Trump regulations that have been repealed. Get them back on the books. And Kamala Harris is also very outspoken on climate change and yesterday said she wants to lead international negotiations. I loved what Biden said. When he hears climate change, he hears jobs and the ability to invest in clean, renewable energy and energy efficiency. And, you know, this really should have started years ago. Scientists say, you know, we are really on the brink here. And if you're a young person, this is an issue that has really captured your attention because it's their future.
I understand there's a micro and a macro here, Judith, but what can a president, what can an administration do to, let's just say, and this is the micro, of just deal with the issue of the fires in California?
Well, just with the fires, you know, you just need more federal help to fight the fires and evacuate people. I forget his name, the guy who worked with Kristen Nielsen at Homeland Security, who's been in the media a lot lately, he said he was in meetings with Trump where he said, don't send California any more FEMA resources because they didn't vote for me. But California needs FEMA resources and assistance with federal assistance with firefighting. You know, this is a large part of the state is at risk here. So that's the immediate thing. And then, of course, the long term thing is to drive down greenhouse gas emissions so we can reverse the pattern.
And there is also an infrastructure issue, too, right, of the power and power supply that needs to be that is also adding to the problem often.
Yeah, there have been problems with the utility out there not maintaining, not literally trimming around power lines. And so those sparks can sometimes contribute, power line sparks, to creating new fires. It's a mess. Gavin Newsom has a lot on his hands.
He sure does.
And, you know, lives are in the balance here.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's all about climate change. You know, we can talk about the power lines, we can talk about the sparks and the rest of it, but how do we deal with this? Obama had ways of dealing with it, and every one of those ideas from the auto pollution, everything else, have been reversed by this president. So we're getting further and further behind because of his inane objections to the concept of climate change.
And you probably saw earlier this week, he is rushing to give out leases for drilling in the Arctic area, in the Arctic refuge. I mean, you know, that is just incredible. And they're going so fast because they want to issue the leases before the president may be out of office.
Can those be stopped or held off by court cases, Judith?
Yes, although the Arctic has been litigated for years and years and years. So there is a real worry that once the lease is actually given, it will be hard to reverse, unlike in Utah and other public lands where the legal sparring goes on and on. But, you know, we're over 100 federal environmental regulations have been repealed or delayed, many dealing with climate change and drinking water and protecting public health. It's going to take a lot to put these regulations back on the books, but that's got to be hopefully the top priority of a new administration, if indeed there is a new administration. If there is a second term for Trump, it's game over on climate change. I don't think there's going to be enough time to reverse the damage.
We just have about 4 minutes or so. Aaron, I want to go back to you for a second because I know another thing that we wanted to talk to you about was an article and some thoughts earlier this week. We see today that the Dow is up again, I think 60 points right now, but has been soaring. And what that says, and I know there's been some reporting on this, and you have some thoughts on as to what it all means to the overall economy of our country.
I've got a lot of thoughts. So,
well, I only need 4 minutes worth, but go ahead.
I know. you know, the stock market does not reflect the real economy. Do not look to stock market numbers to get a sense of what is happening for the U.S. economy. What the stock market measures is essentially a forward-looking outlook on corporate earnings, period. Corporate earnings can do exceptionally well when the economy is in a recession. Perhaps not for all companies equally, but that's what the stock market reflects is corporate earnings, and corporate earnings can rise or fall independent of how the overall macro economy is performing. It's also important to understand that, you know, when you look at the stock market is a rich person's game. It's essentially millionaires own half of all stocks. So you're looking at 1% of the population who owns half of all stocks. When you
what is your so what is it? So what do you have to be a considered a millionaire today? In other words, a lot of people have.
You know, depending on what definition you want to use, my rule of thumb is that to be in the richest 1% of the population, you need to have earnable income of $1 million a year. But for the wealthy, most of their wealth doesn't come from, you know, paycheck, you know, weekly paychecks. It comes from the ownership of financial and capital assets. So if you're looking at wealth, you need to have accumulated wealth of, I think it's like $14 million or more. So let's just call them millionaires and above. So they own half of all stock, half of all of the stocks. It's, you know, when you factor in the next wealthiest 9%, you're looking at people who earn six figures and above. They control and own 90% of all stock. So for the bottom 90% of the population who only owns 10% of all of the stocks, what happens in the stock market is irrelevant. I mean, it's like watching, you know, professional sports if you're not betting. It's entertaining and it provides some amusement and maybe some information, but it does not affect your life in any meaningful way. And it should also be pointed out that for people earning the bottom 50% of the income distribution, so for people who are earning, say, $60,000 or less, they, on average, do not own any stock. So what happens in the stock market does not tell you what's happening in real people's lives. It doesn't tell you about what's happening in the macro economy. It tells you about how investors are gauging the future for corporate earnings.
How about the 401ks?
So did I come in under 4 minutes, Joe?
You did. You have a minute left, so you can answer Alan's question, yes.
What about all those 401ks? You know, obviously.
Those are included in the – no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You finish.
No, you. Go ahead. Those are included. Go ahead.
Okay. Those were included in the numbers I gave you. You know, 401ks are a retirement package named after the IRS tax section that allows that. People who have 401ks are included in the numbers I gave you. So, again, it's the stock market. You're really talking about people who are earning, who are fortunate enough to be earning six figures and above. 401k participation and stock ownership, much like stock ownership, is concentrated at the very top of the income distribution.
Gotcha.
I have to we'll have to end it there, but thank you very much. We're out of time. Have a beautiful weekend, everybody. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks
to Judith and Aaron and Sienna. Thank you for being a part of the program. We will continue with the Congressional Corner right after this.